Okay. Good. So let's start with the three questions. You tell me which of the three you want. As I promised you last week, one of the three is going to be a chazak. I had originally told you that we were going to do all the questions would be some of the questions in the last chumash. This is Parashas Vayechi this week. The last chumash. So some of the questions we didn't get to were through all the different chaburas that we had. I went back over that and I got so involved in two other questions that I thought maybe we'd share those first. They looked more interesting at the moment in time. So here we go. Question number one is, I heard that one may not read comics on Shabbos. Is that true? How come all the sheets from the schools have sections for our kids to draw pictures if we're not allowed to do that? And what about the Parsha sheets that have pictures in comic form? What about the Chulin picture book? Dafyomi is learning Chulin now. I have a big book that gets used a lot called the Sichas Chulin. We used it last Friday night. So in this year, how come I'm seeing that used in so many Dafyomi groups? How are those usher too? What's the rule? What's the deal? That's question number one. Topic number two. This is the one that Shlomo Kimmel and I was inspired by Shlomo, and I thank you, Shlomo, because I know you're listening. Okay, what's up with this? I heard that an Orthodox Heksher refused to give its Heksher to a fully kosher hotel for Pesach because they didn't like some of the entertainment. Is that proper? What if it was for a caterer at a wedding hall? Do they need to be concerned about Orthodox Heksher, they need to be concerned about measuring every guest's level of piety, parentheses, and length of outfit, or threaten to remove its Heksher from the wedding? What about a local vod giving its heksher at a restaurant? Do we need mashgichim checking to make sure that every table is only talking Torah? Does the proprietor need to worry that if a patron speaks lashon hara or advances a theory at a table that is heretical, that his eatery will lose its heksher? Seriously, where's the line for the heksher? It's question number two. And then the third one is an oldie but a goodie, one we did not get to last time. When it was up on the list, I'm wondering whether we'll get to it this time. My child attends a school with a serious approach to bullying. It got me thinking, can a school expel a child for bullying because he or she is preventing the others from learning? What if the offending person is not a bully, which may be open to different levels of interpretation, but a drug dealer? If he's crowding my child's learning experience, does it make a difference? So we have comics. The general title isn't life comical. We've got comics. We've got the bully. And then we got the vadakashas, which some will say may also be bullying. Right? Which of the three should we start with? Number two. That's what I thought everyone was going to go with. That's what Shlomo wanted me to go with. Okay. So let's start taking I'll go over the question, and then we'll start putting it together. Right? We'll put it together. Okay, Yidi, you missed the vote. We're voting number two is the winner. You're right on time, though. What's up with this? I heard that an Orthodox Heksher refused to give its Heksher to a fully kosher hotel for Pesach because they didn't like some of the entertainment. Is that proper? What if it was for a caterer at a wedding hall? Do they need to be concerned about measuring every guest's level of piety and length of outfit or threaten to remove its Heksher from the wedding? What about a local vod giving its heksher at a restaurant? Do we need machshkichim checking to make sure that every table is only talking Torah? Does the proprietor need to worry if a patron speaks lashon hara or advances a theory that's heretical at a table conversation that his eatery will lose its heksher? And with all the great questions, bottom line, what is the line for the heksher? That's the overarching question. What are the things we need to... First of all, thoughts. Okay, that's a statement of fact. They do it in Israel. Where do they do it in Israel? No, this is important. Marvin says correct. Where do they do it in Israel? In what context?
Hotels, restaurants, I think.
Meaning what?
That they will now, if they have the wrong entertainment there, they'll pull the
is that
even legal in Israel?
It's not just entertainment.
So Yossi says, wait a minute, is that even legal? Yossi remembers walking into restaurants that say, Kasher la'ochle basar b'chalav b'lvad. Right? It's kosher only for those who eat milk and meat together. So, there are all sorts of levels. So, yes, he says, I can't really believe that, you can have a cheeseburger, but if you get up and tell, jokes from a person of ill repute is making fun of Judaism, the scantily dressed male or female, right? Now all of a sudden the hasher, the hasher for the kasher lochle basar b'chalav b'lvad will be lost.
Well, I think specifically from what I remember, what might have been with belly dancers.
Okay. Marvin, let me ask you. So if you made a statement of fact, is it proper? Often what I hear in return from people is, that's just politics. That's just politics. Right? Is it just politics? Because I'm not here to talk politics.
Okay. What the Heksher is for.
Now I'm starting to think, good. Explain.
So is the Heksher on the food? Is it on the environment and the food? Is it on the all-encompassing experience? If it's a kosher restaurant, is the Torahic environment, I guess, as important as the quality and the kosher food?
And depending on the certifying organization, they might stipulate that in their contract, and therefore they have a right to pull their Heksher, and the restaurant has a right to find another.
Good. That's a good question. That's a good point. They have a right. You say they have a right. Marvin says sometimes they don't have a right. That's a bone of contention. Now here comes my piece. See, I live in a town where all of a sudden, if a Heksher would be pulled, the first thing we'd be told is it's the rabbis being money grubbing. Even though, because the rabbis make a fortune off that, we are making a killing off the Heksher. Every time we give a Heksher, my salary is like tripled and quadrupled. But I also want to remind you, those of you who don't know math, that 2 and 3 and 4 times 0 is still exactly. So it's not about us taking major amounts of money because we don't get paid for the Heksher, right? That said, we pay our mashgichim. The people who are full-time mashgichim, you go into the Chinese, the people who are there are getting paid full-time. The mashgichim and the one staff, they're getting paid full-time. But the rabbanim that are involved in the rotations and the upkeep of all that share, and we don't get paid. We get doubles and triples and quadruples in salary, but, when you multiply it.
Except the line of readers.
Huh? Oh, so that's the issue, right? So the question is, the one thing that does happen a lot is, it's all politics. It's always politics. I don't think it's always politics. So on, strange places of Maris Ayin, like, I don't know what's up with that, or other places like that, people say, I know for sure the rabbis are crazy. Are the rabbis crazy when that happens? Is it, if a Heksher in a certain place, it has a right to pull its Heksher. But what are the rules? How are honest Vade Heksher supposed to look at things? That's really, in essence, what we're looking at. I'm not here to talk politics, except to say it's not about politics. Clearly, there must be some sort of system. So what would be, if we can imagine that it's not politics, because I wouldn't have put it on the table as a discussion if it was just going to be a political discussion, what would some of the issues need to be? So Ryan says, I understand the question. It's a fundamental question of what are you giving your Heksher on? Well, okay, so that's a good point. I think you're spot on. Obviously, the fundamental question is, what are they giving their Heksher on, right? What should they be giving their Heksher on?
Whatever they disclose.
Meaning?
If they consider themselves a Vad HaTahara instead of a Vad HaKashrus, then...
So you feel that as long as their food comes out... Now I'm going to have fun, because when I was discussing this with Shlomo, forgive me, now especially since there are going to be hundreds of people listening to this at YU Torah. Right? So Shlomo says, there's apparently a very interesting type of bar where they serve chicken wings and the people who bring the chicken wings are less than dressed. I forgot the name of the bar, but you guys know which one I'm talking about? It's on 22.
Oh.
Right? Something about owls or something like that. I forgot what it's called. So let's say I wanted to know, right? I want to go ahead and... I want to give a Heksher to the chicken wings so that everybody can go in, because they're supposedly the chicken wings in this particular bar is like very, very delicious. Do you think that it would be appropriate for the Vad HaRabbanim to get together and it's kosher chicken wings, right? They promise they'll serve kosher chicken wings. But their waitresses and the environment, would you say that you'd allow your 16-year-old, 17-year-old, 18-year-old son to go ahead and go get chicken wings in that bar?
Kosher is not limited to the ingredients.
Oh, so you disagree with Yossi. So explain.
Excluding
the Shlomo, I told you that would work.
Excluding the establishment that's owned by a Jew, where he becomes the mashkiach tamidi, even if you go into a kosher establishment owned by a guy and the ingredients are all kosher, there has to be some sense of trust, whether he gives you the keys or whatever it is. You have to have a working relationship where you know he's not going to try every minute to sneak behind your back.
Okay.
So it's not that we're questioning the hashkafa per se, we're questioning how much we trust that the ingredients and the practices are within.
Very good. Okay, so one thing that that needs to be on the table, says Josh, is some degree of trust. And where's the line of trust? Does that mean that somebody who's not from, who has a full-time mashgiach, it's not Shomer Shabbos, but he has a mashgiach in the store full-time, that that's not good enough? Because, like, which mitzvahs do we say yes and which mitzvahs do we say no?
We said last week, a guy's going to be chote, he's going to wear his yarmulke, he's not going to eat treif just because he's doing another sin.
Right, so if a guy, look,
why should he eat treif chicken wings? He could eat kosher chicken wings.
Right, so you mean like as long as one stop stays open, you're for the Vad giving a hechsher to the chicken wings in that place, because he could go to one stop to get the chicken wings, and you're choosing to go to place on 22.
No,
you don't. I did not expect to go there tonight. Just so
the, you know. It's the other way around. If enough people are going to get the chicken wings on 22, maybe it should be kosher. Because why should those people be over another iser if we could prevent them from being over another iser?
Oh, you're reversing last week's conversation. Wow! Wow! Okay. I want you to call Shandy and ask her if she agrees that Yehuda should be going to 22.
Not Yehuda.
He's going to be forbidden.
No, it's people who are already going there. There are people who are from or shomer most mitzvos who do things that they're not supposed to be doing.
Our standards of kashrus should be to the lowest lowest level.
But why should those people have to eat treif?
Maybe they're not eating treif.
They don't have to. They choose to.
They're choosing.
No,
you want to offer kosher food when they're there.
They can eat lettuce and check it for bugs.
What you're saying is that we don't trust the kashrus of the food there.
No,
because
he just put one issue.
No, because of the people who are.
No, he said no. That's not what he said, Yossi. That's not what he said at all. That you're correct. That if that's what you assumed. But that's not what he said. What he said was part of what goes into whether a hashgacha should be providing its certification should be based on a certain level of trust. That's what he said. It's very different.
Don't trust somebody because they have
certain. No, that's not what he said at all. He said, go ahead. You want to say something?
If I want to let my teenage son go, it's not because of the food. It's because of the environment.
Right.
There's still nothing wrong as long as it's a reputable hashgacha. The food is fine.
But you're starting backwards. But you're starting backwards.
So then any rav who has hashgacha says, you know what? That's maybe the obvious example, that type of restaurant. But let's say it's a restaurant in Teaneck, and they have a guy playing live music Thursday night, and he's playing a Bob Dylan song. Now, Ross says, Goyish music, you lose my hashgacha. Where do you draw the line?
Right, so that's my question.
So hashgacha should be in the business of just food, not everything else.
Okay, so then
don't go there, but not because of the hashgacha.
So one second. So for the individual should be left with their choice, but the Vada Kashrus has a response that you agree with, Yossi.
It's
been very quiet over here.
There are hashgachos that won't give a hashgacha on a wedding call that has mixed seating.
Correct.
But the wedding call is allowed to get a different hashgacha.
Yeah. Right. Okay. But what if they...
Question. Go ahead. Isn't this just an opinion question? Because we're just... Meaning like the hashgacha can decide whether they're giving...
So in the United States... Marvin cuts right to the chase. The answer is, theoretically, first of all, this question didn't grow in a nutshell. This happens to be a very major issue in certain boroughs, Brooklyn. I'm sorry, I had something caught in my throat. Right, right now, it's a major discussion in every house in that particular neighborhood that's not talking about vaccine. This is the other question that people are talking about.
Wasn't there also an issue a little bit east of Brooklyn where they complained that the waitresses' sleeves were too short so they pulled out their elbows?
There was a discussion in Bergen County when a certain restaurant opened. I don't know if you call it a restaurant, more like a sports bar, right? Where the local VOD refused to give a hashtag because they didn't want to give a hashtag to the sports bar.
Or they pulled their shkacha because they didn't like the name. HaKadosh Barbecue, had to change their name. They
lost right, shkacha. So, okay. So,
just off the name. So,
I'm not...
You're not focused on the food, the ingredients, and now you're focused on the ambience, the name, the...
So what Tamar says back to you, is, fine, so in all these places, there are the standards, but fine, but I want to ask us, we're going to have an intelligent conversation. Right? Somebody's sitting at a table somewhere on Chalmers, and out of the blue, someone says, okay, but I was reading the FJJ, the Flatbush Jewish Journal, and this was the discussion of the day, and what does everyone think? And everyone else is going to sit around and talk, you know, through the top of their hats, and we're going to be able to turn around because the magical year was 1988. It's important to recognize a couple of things. Point number one, not everything that everyone assumes is kosher is so. Right? Just because somebody goes onto a WhatsApp chat and says, I sell ice cream out of my freezer, that doesn't mean that's kosher. If the person has that manus and you trust the person, then what you're saying is, I will go after the person and trust the person. The more the person develops into a commercial environment, the more nervous I would be personally. Just as a point of fact, right? That's why we have a system of hashgachos. And that's why we have people take the responsibility to let us know that in the position of the people who signed the letter at the bottom of the certification that says, we say this is kosher, what they're saying is, we would eat there, right? Or it meets our standards of kashrus, right? And that's, by the way, why you have all of these different pieces of diversity that you've all talked about. That's why in certain places, in Yerushalayim, to have a certain type of badatz, the chairs have to be up on the table by 8:45, right? If you come in there, you can only get takeout after 8:45. Why? Because that's their standard. They don't want people, they feel it's Bittelsman after 8:45. Don't ask me why, but that's the rule. You're right. The bigger question is, what should go into making that? And in the year 1988, this issue came to a head in Israel's Supreme Court, known as the Bagatz. Right? What happened? There was a problem because there was a Knesset bill that was signed into law. The Knesset bill was called the Chok HaHona'a B'Kashrut. What is the Chok HaHona'a B'Kashrut? It was a bill that kind of basically wanted to make sure that there were no scandals in the kashrus industry, which of course seems to be something that seems to come up over and over and over again. And so what the Knesset decided in 1988 was that the only consideration that should be taken into account by government-funded rabbanuts was the standard of the kashrut of the food alone. This is the possession of the Knesset bill. Well, go ahead.
There's a difference there
because
they're government funded.
Well, right? Therefore they are instructed to make sure that there's government regulation.
That the food is kosher.
That is correct. So if you don't like anything else, right. If you don't like anything else about the place, then we can say don't go, right? But if there's a bar and there are people in the bar and they're inappropriately dressed, but the chicken wings are kosher, they apply for a hashtag, and they're following all the standard rules, then you have to give the hashtag to the bar.
And if the cheese dip that they did the chicken wings in is also kosher?
So
in New Jersey, we have restaurants that list themselves as kosher, and legally they're allowed to do that when they serve it.
In Israel has a state-funded rabbinate that basically gives hashgacha to the food. That is their mandate. We're talking about a very different issue in the United States, where they're private institutions, and they can set their own mandate.
But what was cool about this case and this chok is that it sort of opened up the eyes of rabbanim to look at what goes into your last point. And let me explain. In 1988, a certain female DJ and dancer discovers, like, wait a second, I'm not getting so many gigs in Yerushalayim anymore. And she starts looking into the issue, and she sees that the reason why is she keeps calling all the different halls where she used to get hired. And she finds out that the reason why is that she's blacklisted. So she says, what does that mean, she's blacklisted? She said that the Rabbanut said, the local Rabbanut in 1988 apparently said that if you are a hall and you want to be under our Rabbanut, then you better make sure that you adhere to our standards of tznius. And this woman, well, let's just say that when she played at her weddings in her DJ clothes and her dancing clothes, it wasn't exactly going to meet the standards that would not get her sent to the tznius lady in Bruria. Let's just leave it at that. And so as such, right, she wasn't getting the gigs in Yerushalayim. So what do you do if you don't get the gigs in Yerushalayim in 1988? You sue. And so she opens up a case against the Rabbanut in Yerushalayim. Now here's the question. Josh asks the question. He goes, wait a minute. If all the food is kosher, but it's being mixed wrong, so who sets the standards? Here's the thing where the Chol Kohanah also turned around and said, the decisions for the level of kashas, though, were supposed to be determined by the local Rabbanim HaRashiim. And so the court had an obligation to reach out to the Rabbanim HaRashiim to ask them what's going on with these different halls, right? And so they did, which is great for us. Not so great for what happened, as you'll hear in the rest of the story, but it did open up our eyes to the very question we're all dancing around, right? The whole bigger issue is, does a VOD have a right to set standards, and what should some of those standards include? So the two chief rabbis who have both gone into the world of truth, right, both provided answers to the court's questions as to why it is that they felt that they didn't have to keep the Chol Kohanah. So Rav Yitzchak Kulitz, the Ashkenazi chief rabbi, puts out the first issue, and he says it's called Chashad and Maris Ayin, right? And he says, let me explain what that means. The Torah tells us, it's in Chumash Bamidbar, Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Chaf Beis, that we have a responsibility, right? V'yisem nekiyem me'ashem umi'yisrael. We have a responsibility to be clear, and we have to be innocent, not to have any chashad, not to have any doubts. And the Yushalmi and Shkalim, Perek Yimo, Mishnah Beis, notes that this means that a person needs to do right, not only based on the standards of Hashem, but also based on the standards of Am Yisrael, to which the Sefer Yireyim in Simen Reish Ayin and the Meiri to Yuma on Daf Lamed Ches Amad Aleph comment that in addition to doing that which is halachically sound, we also have a responsibility, not even if what I'm doing is halachically sound, I have to go beyond that and make sure that it doesn't even look like I'm doing the wrong thing. I have a responsibility to go ahead and make it look like I am doing everything properly and not acting with any impropriety. This leads the Shulchan Aruch to many, many different types of halachos, all of which are built off Maris Ayin and directly connected to food. Like in Yerideya, Simen Samach Vav, Sif Tes. The Gemara tells a story. Well, the Shulchan Aruch speaks about a story of an individual who decided that in order to make it look good, he wanted to, he took a chalice of some sort, which of course today would have been called a goblet or a cup, right? And he filled it with fish blood. And he wanted to drink the fish blood. Is fish blood usher? No. Animal blood is usher, right? But can a person, theoretically speaking, eat fish blood? Well, other than when you're having a good piece of herring, which is actually is an impossibility because there's no such thing as a good piece of herring because I don't like fish, right? I have to just work that in there, right? So in such a situation, if a person is going to drink fish blood, right, theoretically speaking, there should be no halachic problem. Except for Maris Ayin. So the Shulchan Aruch says you may not go ahead and drink the fish blood unless you do something. What is the thing you need to do? So you need some sort of heker or simen, right? Take fish scales and put it out there so that the blood is clearly understood by anyone who sees you. You look like you're going to pass out over there, right? So let me give you an easier example, because we find the same concept a little bit later in Simen Pei Zayin Siv Gimel, and we all know about this. Right, you go to catering hall for a wedding, and at the end of the wedding, they come ahead and they say, would you like some coffee? right? And when they bring out the coffee, they say, would you like some milk with that? Now, they just serve Chateau Le Bleuf, and also, I just made that up, right? But some fancy meats, and some other fancy meats, and then some not-so-fancy meats that have fancy names to them, and now they're bringing it out in coffee with milk? So you say, oh my gosh, Basa V'Chalav! And they say, no, it's not Basa V'Chalav. Why? It's almond milk, it's soy milk. Probably not almond milk, because it probably would be nut-free zone, right? You know, they come up with some sort of means to make it clear it's a part of non-dairy creamer, which, by the way, you have to understand, non-dairy does not necessarily mean non-milchic. You have to check that. And we have a responsibility, says the Shulchan Aruch, to make sure that we put out a hecker, like putting out the almonds, so that people should know that the milk that you're using is indeed not milk, it's just some white substance that cools off just as well as milk would. And that's why you're allowed to go ahead. And if a person would not do so, if you would drink the fish blood, right? I don't have the fish scales, I only have the fish blood. Can I, right? I went to the store, and it was a specialty store, and there was a jar, but the label fell off. But it's clearly it's fish blood. I'm sure it's fish blood. Can I drink the fish blood? No. The halacha is the fish blood is no longer kosher. Right? Same thing. If I have no... the guys threw out all the boxes with the soy milk. Now it's only in those little... you know what I'm talking about? The creamers, right? The whatever you call the little tiny metal thing that you put the cream in. Right? And now it's all out on all the tables. And the mashgiach comes out screaming... There's no way of putting a hecker out there. So if it wasn't Shabbos, there is. Just take a little tape and write non-dairy, right? Or almond milk, right? Which is just as good as putting the almonds out there. Or soybeans, whatever the case is. But he can't do it for whatever reason, right? Can he go ahead and have the milk with your coffee? Halacha? No, you can't. Because the fact that there is a Maris Ayin problem in these two instances, and I can think of many others, the issue makes it such that therefore the food itself is no longer considered kosher. Now let's think about what that means for a moment. Just let me... So we see two critical lessons about Maris Ayin. Maris Ayin could be usher for two reasons. Reason number one why Maris Ayin could be usher is because what's going to happen? The guy sees you drinking the fish blood. He's going to go home and do what? Drink it. Drink. He's going to think you're drinking blood. He's going to go home and say, "Oh, cool! I'm going to outdo the vampires on Halloween. I'm going to finally get those guys who make all that stuff. I'm going to come out there and have animal blood. I'm going to really show them a thing or two. And we're not allowed to go ahead and do so, right?" So in other words, says the Meiri in Yuman Daf Vav Amid Aleph, in Psachman Daf Vav Amid Aleph rather, and the Shas Tshuvas Be'er Sheva Simon Yud Zion, they say that what's happening when the person drinks the fish blood without the hecker, he's causing the person to think drinking all blood is okay. That's the Maris Ayin. The other possibility is that the person is going to look. And the person is going to see something with his eye. What's he going to see? And here's where last week's chabur that you referenced before comes into play. He's going to see you. And he's going to see you drinking blood. And he's going to pull out the WhatsApp. And he's going to go with his thumbs. And now before you even finish the glass, 6,487... I don't think it's friends at this point. 6,487,000 friends... He's already timing it, right? Are now all aware that this guy who pretends that he's a rabbi who speaks on Thursday nights drinks fish blood. So this is a double problem. Because what's the one thing everyone knows about my relationship with fish? I don't like it. Now all of a sudden people are going to say, ha, we know he's been fooling us all these years. But also there are people going to walk around saying, okay, he drinks blood. Well, blood, right? We all know that blood is not kosher. He's drinking blood. What does that tell us? Forget about the fact that now maybe we'll think all blood is kosher. What's more likely to happen is we're going to say Schwartz is a fraud, right? Both of which things become an issue. And that this second approach to Maris Ayin is mentioned by Rashi in Masechta Shabbos on Dav Samach Dalet Amud Beis. So we see that both things come into play for Kashrus, says Rabbi Kulitz. What's going to happen is the guy who comes into a restaurant that has questionable standards, like that like the bar on 22, right? And he sees the scantily clad women, and he sees the chicken wings. So what's going to happen? The patron will say that either the rabbis think scantily clad women or scantily clad men is 100%.
Wait,
1 second, let me finish. Right? That the rabbis will think that the performance is such a is okay. Right? Or for instance, let me parallel this with another case I was thinking about. If the rabbis put their stamp of approval on marijuana, which was also a very major issue that came up last year, right, that people are going to think, oh, the rabbis think it's okay to get higher and higher and higher, right?
It's but going to go beyond the food, I guess he's saying, because the second reason you gave, the second approach you just mentioned, would explain, I think, why those who don't eat the McDonald's in Eretz Yisrael, even though it has a two-domino wall, because people are going to say, well, okay, you can eat McDonald's.
Right, so of course.
So that's the case. All the ingredients in McDonald's
could
be
kosher.
But you can't eat them.
Right, so Rabbi Kulit said that the rabbis can't be trusted. The other possibility is that the rabbis would not be able to be trusted because clearly they have no standards. That's what people would say about them. So Rav Kulitz came along and he said, my first problem with this whole Bubba Maisa of the Chok Hona'ah B'Kashrut is the fact that the Chok Hona'ah, the way you, the court, the way this lady is reading the Chok Hona'ah is in direct opposition. It's not like an idea around the food. It is a problem with the food itself. This was the suggestion of Rabbi Kulitz, part one. By the way, Chacham Tzvi goes further. Because the Chacham Tzvi in Siman Tzadi Aleph in his Shalosh Tshuvos, he adds that even if the people will accuse you in error, they're wrong. Right? Still notwithstanding, you have to be concerned about that. Especially, says the Chacham Tzvi, when it's a public matter and people are flipping. Which basically means everything today. Go ahead.
It's so subjective. Because you have a kosher stand in MetLife Stadium, right? It's also to go to a sports stadium, right?
So one second. You just made a decision. You're right. Let's say Satmar, the Vatakashas of Kiryas Yoel. Right? So if the Vada Kashas of Kiryas Yoel were to want to give the Hesher to the hot dogs at Giant Stadium, the answer is yes, that would be a problem. Much the same way that if the Vada Rabbanim of Greater Elizabeth were to be asked to go ahead and provide the Hesher for the kosher hot dogs on Saturdays at the time that the Jets are playing on a Saturday game at MetLife Stadium, then the answer would be that would also be a question about us as well, which is why in all those stadiums, the one thing you can't get on Shabbos is a kosher hot dog, right? And you're like, oh, come on, that's ridiculous.
You can get a
kosher No, you cannot. You can get a pretzel. You can get a pretzel that may have been heated up It may have been bought from what do they call the company? Super Pretzel,
yeah.
Right? And Super Pretzel may be under the OU, but I don't think
the OU should say you can't sell my pretzels on Shabbos because it's going to be
so the OU, what,
on the Rabbanim on the OU.
No, because if at MetLife Stadium they wanted to go ahead and say Super Pretzel, our Super Pretzel stand is under the OU,
no,
right? 1 second,
you're always allowed to go one step further. The Pretzel has a hefter from the OU. The OU is not in the stadium,
right, so,
but if I see this product with an OU on it,
so what the OU, so what the OU, so what the OU will do if they discover that, and it's you're not allowed to do this, but it's because of this, because of your question, but what the OU would do if let's say Joe's stand in Concourse 32B, right, would start advertising, we have kosher pretzels under the OU, right? Or we have OU supervised pretzels. What would happen is the OU would litigate against them. They would likely win that case because you're making a claim that your pretzel, unless you would word it in such a way, and if you didn't, the OU would fight it and they would take out ads all over the place saying don't buy at Joe's because Joe
is paying the OU tons of money to get that stamp.
But
not. But
the statement is not about the box. The food is kosher.
Right.
The food when you go into Stop and Shop or into ShopRite or into I don't think we carry them one stop, right? You know, and you buy the Super Pretzel, that Super Pretzel is fine. And when you take it out and put it into your oven, it is fine. if you bring it out to an oven, like, say, down the block somewhere on Stanton, right, say Rabbi Wilansky or Rabbi Kanowski's houses, right, and you put it in those ovens and you take it out of the ovens, right, I'm pretty sure that we could all agree that the super pretzel is not fine. Why? Because none of the other ovens on the block are kosher.
We can agree to that, but my point is,
no, there is a sof. That's the point. There is a sof. The basic standard is, the argument that was advanced was, the Chok HaShva'a says that if you want to say our standard has to be the kashas of the food, Rabbi Kulich says you can't say that, because the kashas of the food is inherently connected to Maris Ayin and Chashad. One of the things that goes into the kashas of the food is the question of Maris Ayin and Chashad. It's not an ancillary issue. It's a chashad means that the people are going to accuse you not having any standards.
The other examples of Maris Ayin, fish blood in the milk,
yeah,
are directly related to perceived mistake on the food itself.
The
fact that there's entertainment, a TV on the wall in the restaurant, how does that become a Maris Ayin on the food? Again,
so let's put the TV on this side for a minute. And let's talk about the case that Rabbi Kulich is dealing with, or the case of the owls or the hoots or whatever, something like that, right? That bar on 22, right, where the person is inappropriately dressed. Because I think that maybe our standards may be a little bit different when it comes to a bar where all they're showing is Fox News and baseball and football. Assuming that there's some way of making sure that it's clean.
Just as bad as
so by the way, to those places, those places will not and should not give a hechsher in that instance, according to what we're saying right now. You're right. If I had a problem with having a place which has any television whatsoever, because I feel that the TV by definition is a dover usser, right? And so you're bringing in...
So that's the reason why it should be a blacklisted. Not because of Maris Ayin on the food.
No, Maris Ayin...
You can't go in there because of what they're playing on the TV. Nothing to do with the food.
No, but it is... That's incorrect. What Rabbi Kulitz is saying is it is about the food. Because my mashgiach can't be in that store right now. Right, he can't be in the store and saying the food is kosher, because people are going to look at him and they're going to say one thing right now. Either, oh, it must be mutter, right? Giving a heksher in such a place must be mutter. Or, B, what, they're going to say what? They're going to say, you can't trust the mashgiach. He's
so
Adam Trace.
What if he wears a sign
of only talking about the
food? You're
saying
the self-designated chumras of the agency actually affects the kashrus of the food. Meaning, if somebody holds themselves on such a high level that they can't be seen in a room with a television,
if you
want to
go in, again, if you go into New Square and you open up a restaurant in New Square that shows old baseball games from the 1970s when everything was clean, right? Yes, the New Square people have a right to say, the Vada Kashas of New Square has a right to say, get out of our town.
But you're saying that,
and they should
they
not provide
with
Hashem.
Right,
they have a right to tell. Yeah, you want. Again, you can say, I can say it if it's my standard. It would be, I have to tell you, in my own personal case, it would be a little bit inappropriate. I've taken my kid to a baseball game.
Okay,
it was cold outside. It wasn't, there wasn't any questions about the way people were dressed. And by the way, the tickets cost $4.07, which was really cool.
The problem is that anyone can say,
and we ate a lot of food there.
My status is higher. That makes the food trade. There's no guidelines. This is where I hold myself. I hold myself to be here. Therefore, your food is straight.
No, if our environment says that, but it gets a little bit more difficult. And see, listen to the second point that Rav Kulitz made, which may answer your point and attach itself to the one you just made. Rav Kulitz says there's a second issue. What's the second issue? Histaklus. Listakel means to look. So he says, listen, the Gemara in Sanhedrin and he keeps his letter very short. Ayin Hayamad Aleph speaks of a certain tells a certain story. It's a well known story to any high school age boy over the age of 16. You ask them all; they know one Gemara in Sanhedrin. This is the Gemara. There was a certain guy. He fell in love with a girl. Yossi's already blushing, and he knows that Yehuda must have asked him about this Gemara, right? So you know the Gemara. Okay, so you know the Gemara, right?
Yeah.
The guy, what? Okay, so the Gemara says he was madly in love with this girl. And he said, I'm so crazy in love with this girl. If I don't see her and talk to her and get to see her less than fully clothed, right, I'm going to die. So the Rabbanim said, I'm sorry, you know, say vidui, call your people around, because we're not. What if she's going to stand behind the curtain? And she'll only talk, but I'll know that she's under. That'll solve it, right? That'll solve it for me, right? The Gemara says, still, no, nothing doing. It's better to let the person go than go through this experience. And of course, the Rambam discusses a similar situation. Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah Perek Ches Halacha Tes Beis Yosef in Yoridei Simin Kuf Nun Zion and the Shach over there in Sifkat and Tes. It's all what we call a general category of Abizrayu Degili Arayos. It's one of the Yeharig Vayavar situations. And so, therefore, if you have that type of a situation going on, that creates a very big problem. Says Rav Kulitz, I have a second problem. I need a person in that store. They're making wings. I need a mashgiach, right? I can't have my mashgiach in the store when the performance is going on. So therefore, what does he have to do? He has to leave. Now what happens when he leaves? There's no mashgiach for a certain period in time. Kind of hechsher, there's no mashgiach for a certain period in time. And so therefore, there should not be a hechsher. So Rav Kulitz turns around and he says, for these two major reasons, which is it's three reasons, that's really two. The two different aspects of Maaros Ayin, right? Which is the fact that, on the one hand, people are going to say that we sanction this type of behavior, which would be incorrect. Or people are going to say that we sanction this behavior and I can't, and they can't trust me. Plus, the second issue of Estaklis, where I have to, my mashgiach can't be there, which means I'm going to be stuck, it's just practically.
You have to go check the stock in the freezer, and that's it.
But then there's a period in time where the mashgiach is not watching the kitchen. He's got his head in the freezer. There's no mirsas.
And they know that.
Of course, all they have to do is add six more shows, back to back to back to back to back, and now all of a sudden you've got a gap in the story. Yeah. So what Rav Kulitz said is, and that's what Marvin said before. So Rav Kulitz said, and Marvin said, yeah. So if we know, I'll get back to this because it's going to have some practical nafkaminas. But Rav Kulitz said no. He thinks that shows a lack of understanding. Not everybody agrees, right? But the second issue we certainly realize could be a potential issue. Rav Shalom Messas was the Sephardic chief rabbi, right? And he turned around and he said, let me add one more thing. He says, what's the one more thing? He says, exactly what Josh said. So, Baruch Shekivanta. Right? Josh said, Kashrus is not just about having mashkichim around. It involves a certain degree of trust with the owner. Right? In other words, when a institution, a wedding hall, a restaurant, gets a hashgacha, there's a certain understanding that the vad that's giving the hashgacha, the certifying agency, isn't just putting the store under rabbinical supervision. The rabbis are also saying that whatever the person's personal practices are, we don't think that that person's going to trick other people, right? I mean, may not be able to trust to see that, to leave him alone in the place, but we at least trust that he's not, that if he has both options in front of him, right, nevela, something that's treif, and something that's kosher, that he's not going to say, I'm going to shove non-kosher in your mouth on purpose. If you don't have that trust, they shouldn't be able to give the person kosher, right? Remember the LA meat scandal, right? That was one of the major issues that came up over there, why they forced him to sell out his stuff, right? You can't trust the person. That's why we need to, and that's why there are times where a person can have a hasher, and then the vad will yank the hasher. There are other times that the person can have a hasher, an accident will happen, right? And as a result, the hasher will not be yanked. There'll be some penalty to be. What's the difference between the two? The answer is very simple, says Rav Messas. On the one hand, I have a trust, and the other hand, I don't. We had the shiloh like last month, in the middle of the summer, in one of the neighboring New Jersey towns, where a rumor went around that the guy, could not be trusted anymore, and it turned out it wasn't true. The whole thing was a farce. And that particular town's Vada Rabbanim had to come out and put out a letter that there was no problem. There was a discussion about something, and the call went out to the rabbis, and they had to go ahead and deal with the discussion. So, but once we know that the person can't be trusted because he will sell out his people and get them to do an Aveira, right? So then all of a sudden, we can't provide the Hashra for the person, period. Like Josh said, the person doesn't have a certain amanus, right? We don't have a working partner in the business. Everyone with me? Everyone in agreement? Now here comes the fun part. Now let's go back to the owl store on the owl bar, right? The Gemara in Kedushin on Daf Mem Amud Aleph tells the story of a certain non-Jewish woman who tried to entice Rabbi Tzadok, and she tried to get him to sin. So he says, "I'm starving. Before I do that particular sin, you know, the way to a man's heart is through his stomach. So, you have anything?" She says, "All I have is a non-kosher meat." So he says, "Look, I'm already going to do one of it. I might as well go for two at the same time." So she goes, "Okay." So she says, "Here's the meat. Go make it yourself." Right? So he goes ahead, and when she's not looking, and she is obviously in control of the situation, when she's not looking, he says, "Okay, I'm lighting the oven." And he lights the oven, and before she turns around, instead of the meat being in the oven, he's sitting in the oven. He's a very interesting character, colorful character of Tzadok. Right? As you know from other Gemaras, Gittin and other places. So she said, "Look, what are you doing?" He says, "Well, if one's going to be Baal Nachris, he's worthy of eating treif. And by the way, somebody who does this eats treif, which means somebody who will have relations with a Nachris is like someone who eats treif. Somebody who eats treif belongs in Gehenna. I figured I'd just get a head start." This is the Gemara in Kedushin, Daf Mem Amud Aleph. Right? So she says, "If this is the way you are, we'd never have bothered you," and the whole story went away. So that was the end of the story. Right? But one thing we do see, that somebody who tricks somebody into a arayus, right, it's obviously a pretty serious matter. And so therefore, especially when the person makes a profit, you have a lounge act with people who are walking around scantily clad, right? So in such a situation, that's a trick for arayus. Kol b'isha erva, you're going to have a lounge singer, right? That's a process of arayus. That's a major issue. In fact, Rav Masas, who was originally from Morocco, said that the tradition in Morocco was that they refused, like you said before, it's like, great, Marvin's cutting the shear out. Now, what am I going to do for the next 46 minutes, right? But 45 minutes ago, Marvin told us that something about belly dancers, it was Rav Masas in 1988, based on his response, he says, in Morocco, the community as a whole, they had restaurants, but the one thing they never allowed was the belly dancers. Now, who ever heard of Morocco without belly dancers? Every restaurant in Morocco has belly dancers. Says Rav Masas, we refused to give a hechsher to any place that had belly dancers. These were the double responses that were given in 1988-89 to this particular trial. And so what we get out of these different issues is, it's very hard to say, I'm only giving a hechsher on the food, when so much that's involved in the hechsher on the food raises some of these other issues. So Rav Elyo Schlesinger, who's the Rav of Gilo, and a fantastic Talmud Chacham. He has a sefer called Askinu Sudas. It's some great svarim in general. But in the sefer Askinu Sudas and Simon Nun Vav, he writes, despite the fact that what happened after all this was said and done was that the Supreme Court ruled in 1991 when they gave out their decision, they said that the rabbis were wrong and that they have to follow the Chok HaOnah B'Kashrut. So that is the point in time where something else came out in Israel. And what was that? The Rabbanut Mahadrim. Because you can get a Rabbanut, and this is what I get, this is the history, right? Check it out. The Rabbanut Mahadrim came about because of this court case. That is to say, you want to tell us we have to give it, but this is a subpar rasher. We'll give it for this, and we'll give it ochli basa v'chalav, and ochli basa kafu, and those. But if you really want to eat kosher by real standards, get mahadrin, right? And that they can't control. The government can't control, right? You can, the government can't go ahead and say you have to give mahadran to everybody. We have a standard that we apply to everybody. So this was Rav Schlesinger's understanding. Now let's plug this back into that. Explains the Israel situation. Rav Masas and Rav Kulitz tried to argue that you don't have kosher if you can't protect the environment of the kashrus as well, right? Now, let's translate it back here. Forgetting about the fact that we have a right to give whatever we want. What I want to know is, what should be done? I'm sitting at my table on Shabbos, or I'm hanging around, and people are talking about whether it's wrong for this hechsher and the hotel and this, blah, 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 blah. And you took a people, and everyone's talking from what we used to call in yeshiva, boichsvaras. They're talking from the stomach, they're not talking from the heads. And he said, do you guys like at least understand what goes into the discussion? Here's some of the issues. It's a court case, Israeli court. If people use social powers, you read court? Yeah, doesn't everyone read old court proceedings from 1988 in the Israeli courts? Right? Yeah, and there was a tshuva from Rav Kulitz and a show tshuva from Asas. So let's say, and the Rav of Gilo, right, and Askinu Sudasa. But let's go back over how far does this extend. 1994, in a letter that was released internally in the OU on Erev Shabbos Kodesh Parshas Chayei Sarah, Mori V'Rabbi, Rav Shechter was asked the question, is there a connection in a kosher OU restaurant between the entertainment and the food? Right? So Rav Shechter said, I think that the answer is, if the environment is an environment around the food, you cannot argue that I'm only giving the hechsher on the food. If the food is being served in an environment where the environment is not kosher, then the OU should not give a hechsher in such a situation. And that was the case. However, Rav Shechter did draw a distinction in that letter, which if you'd like to see, I actually have a copy of, right? He did say that, I think you can find it online also, he did say that if the hechsher is connected, is not connected to the food, but is connected to an environment at large. Like, for instance, let's say some of these big fancier hotels. There's one, I happened to be looking at this the other day because someone asked me to check into it. There's a place in the Dominican Republic, I think, called Punta Cana. Am I pronouncing that right? So there's a hotel over there which is like spread out all over the place. And according to the blogs, it's impossible to keep tzniyos over there, but there is a restaurant over there and a shul over there, right? And the restaurant's under the chafke, right? Or I'm sorry, under the ok. And they actually keep a full-time mashgiach over there. The guy also lanes in the shul on Shabbos. And they have a full-time kosher chef who's like a real expert. And the question is, like, how does the ok do this? Well, based on Rav Shechter's letter, he says, look, the ok is not giving a hechsher on the whole hotel. That it happens to be that at one foreign section of the hotel, there's a swimming that goes up. When you come into the restaurant, it's understood. This is a subsection that some guy buys in the place. So the fact that the place happens to be also a place that does activities that are improper, right? So that doesn't mean that we can't give a hechsher on the restaurant. People understand that the restaurant on the facility in the hotel has no connection to one another. He did say that, look, that's different from having the lounge singer at the in the bar. Why? He says that's like sanctioning Naval Brishas HaTorah. You can't come up with the argument that, oh, the food is kosher, but the environment is not. And he sees in a later letter of that year, this is Erev Shabbos Kodesh Parshas Chayisar, so Erev Shabbos Kodesh Parshas Bo, which happens at the OU on Fridays. That's why everything is Erev Shabbos Kodesh. So on Erev Shabbos Kodesh Parshas Bo, that same year, Tavshin and Dalit, Rav Shechter said, you know, the person came back and he said, you know, it's just a little bit of Israeli singing that goes on at a private table, right? It's not exactly a big deal. It's possible to have the whole environment. It's like one small section. So Rav Shechter said, look, under those circumstances, that's like having a conversation at a table, right? If it's not the whole environment of the place, he said he would look further into it and figure out. He had to go investigate it himself to figure it out. So it happened to be, I'm reading through the letter, and I then went back over all the cases that Shlomo and I had discussed. I kept adding the cases together. So, you know, the answer is, if it's my restaurant, and I'm inviting somebody to speak, Hillside Man, he's going to host a special party on Sylvester, and he's going to bring a Tweety Bird and something else to have Kol Isha in my restaurant. and I want the Vada Kashrus of the Greater Elizabeth to have Hillside Man allowed to have his Sylvester program, right? Confusing enough, right? So in such a situation, I think it's pretty clear that the Vada Rabbanim should not give a hechsher in that situation. Even though every morsel of food that's going to be served there may be legitimately from kosher sources, the environment is not a kosher source, and it shouldn't look like the Vada Rabbanim of Greater Elizabeth is giving a hechsher in such a situation because the environment is tainted. However, and this I did ask for clarification, it sounds like if I were to run a program in face a hotel, like I don't know what holiday would that like very overtly apply? Pesach, right? Right. So you have these Pesach hotels, right? Sometimes the Pesach hotels. I'll go back to the other sometimes. Let's do the other times. What used to happen is they would take over a subsection of the hotel, right? And they would do whatever they would do in their program. Right, and they would apply to Chveis. Many of these used to be in Florida, so they would go to the ORB in Florida, and they would bring in Mashgichim. Everything would be tip top hechsher. Right, it could be over throughout the hotel. There are people who are going mixed swimming, and there are other sections, but that has nothing to do with the kosher program. Right, so in such a situation, it sounds like Rosh Hashanah would say, that's not a problem. You're about the small section that you're in, and your kashrus is on the food, and everybody understands that you're not sanctioning everything else. Okay? Shine. So now all of a sudden, I'm sitting here earlier this week, and I'm going over the questions that we're taking apart. Clearly, I don't need a mashgiach walking around checking every single table to make sure people aren't telling Lashon Hara or whatever else. Not that Lashon Hara is a good thing, but it won't cause the proprietor to lose his hechsher, because that's not a thing to do with the environment, unless my whole environment is gossip, right? But, you know, I call the restaurant gossip, and we share WhatsApps about everything that goes on in the community and whatever, but unless that's the environment of the restaurant, that shouldn't present a problem. Clearly, that wasn't the discussion. And clearly, in a wedding hall, the whole point of the wedding hall is what? For people to get married. So to have a standard in that hall, right, as to what way we do things, I could easily hear the argument being made that the Heksher has to take those issues into account, and the OU does. Not all Heksherim do. They see the difference. It depends where you are and what you're doing. Sometimes wedding halls, like in the United States very often, the Heksherim don't give a Heksher to the wedding hall. The Heksherim give the Heksher to the caterer. And the caterer goes into different wedding halls. Most of the time, that's what happens. The exception? Places like Crystal Plaza, right? Crystal Plaza has a different story on there. What?
Is this a house caterer? Or?
There's a house caterer, right?
They also have two levels.
But correct. I understand what you mean. I mean it's beyond the scope of the conversation over here, right? And they actually hang out a sign at every wedding you go to in Crystal Plaza as to who's the Heksher. Is it Alpine or is it the other one? And Alpine is under Metro West. The other one is not. So there you actually do have a Heksher as to what's going on, and the Alpine and the Vada Rabbanim of Metro West are actually sanctioning the event under the standards that they find acceptable. But I asked Rav Shachter the following question this week, and I asked his son first, so I got to hear from Rav Shai, my dear friend, and also from my Rebbe. Right? So what if I am a Vada Kashrus and they're going to give a Heksher to a Pesach hotel, right? And they say, whole hotel kosher for Pesach, right? As many of us see in many of the advertisements in the Jewish Link, in the Flappish Jewish Journal, and all the other places where they're going to be discussing all sorts of issues, right? And inside, they say, daily entertainment, four pools, right? Gender identification up to you, right? And certified kosher, whole program, certified kosher, O-N-J, right? I'm making up a Vada Kashrus, right? Should a Vada Kashrus not give a hechsher under such circumstances? Rosh Hashanah says, I don't know. I never asked my father that question, right? And so I asked him a second question. Can a person be a scholar, based on what we're saying, can I even be a scholar in residence at such a program? Look at these advertisements. They tell you that Bozo the Clown is going to be there, and Chaim Yankel the Mentalist, and in tiny little letters underneath, right? You know, Rabbi so-and-so will also be here to lead the Seder in and give shiurim every day and teach the Daf Yomi. He's going to tell the 27th, but Bozo the Clown's going to be there. So the question has to be out there, right? Can I be a scholar in residence on such an advertisement? So I'll tell you that from my experience, and I don't eat out on Pesach, and I also never, unfortunately, I'm not a big enough name to even get an invitation to such a place. So if you want one of these programs, always reach out, right? But, Marvin's like, some rabbi, be Bozo the Clown, you'll get gigs, right? So the question comes up, if I'm a scholar in residence, and I'm a rabbi, and they're going to advertise me, do I have, so I asked this to Roshai, right? I said, should I not take a gig in such a place? That's what we call them in the fancy pants rabbi world. So Roshai says to me, I don't know, I didn't ask my father, but I could see a difference between scholar in residence and the Vada Kashrus. So I wrote back to him and I said, do you mean scholar in residence like you described when you were in Elizabeth in 2015? And he writes me back and says, what did I say in 2015? So if you remember, on Friday night, in Parshas Truma in 2015, Rav Shai Shechter was our scholar in residence, and he told a story about growing up and how over Pesach, you know, his father would come out one night at home, whether he was invited to this place, one night at home, to that place. His point was, he was always dressed up all fancy for Yontif, and because that's the way he dressed on Chol HaMoed, and everybody else was in t-shirts and shorts, and how funny that was for him. Right? But I learned something else out of that story. So you got to darshan stories from Talmidei Chacham in like multiple levels. So his father would go to all these different places, including places where people were in bathing suits and shorts and all this other stuff. So he says, I don't think that if somebody goes to give a shir, you know, one night of Chol HaMoed, that's a big deal. True. But if the advertisement has, you know, a Pesach program featuring Bozo the Clown and Chaim Yanko, the greatest singer in Jewish music, you know, since, all time, will be with us for 15 minutes over Yontif and make $10,000. And by the way, Rabbi so-and-so is coming also to lead all the davening and teach the Daf Yomi and give all the classes. And we can't have Bozo and the Jewish music singer, right? So maybe in that situation, he is sanctioning something. And maybe he should think twice before he takes the gigs. Which is always funny for me, because now I'm going back over last week's paper and I'm looking at all the advertisements to see which rabbis allow themselves to be used in such a way. So so that he said he could see a little bit more discomfort. So Rabbi Shechter is in Florida for Shabbos at my friend Shul, and he was leaving yesterday when this came up, but my nephew is in the shir. So I text my nephew furiously after I finished talking to Roshai, can you ask Rabbi da-da-da? So my nephew calls me back an hour later and he says to me, yeah, he said he thinks it could be a problem. I said, can you give me a little bit more by way of guideline? Because when I talk about this, I want to hear. He says, no, because he was leaving. But he says he could see a difference between the two descriptions that you provided. And I think that there's a very distinct distinction. I think that if your name is going to be associated with a place as advertising, you have to be concerned about Marasayan and Chashad, no different than Rabbi Kulitz's argument in 1988. And we have to consider that as an issue. So we've spoken a full hour. I'm sorry, I feel bad. We didn't get to the other questions this week. But in summation, this is how to have an intelligent conversation about a current events topic. To be able to understand that there's a lot that goes into a hechsher. And if we understand, it's not just about politics. There are major issues on the table. Right? There's an issue of Marasayan. There's an issue of Chashad. There's an issue of Istaklos. There's an issue of just, frankly, the trust factor that Josh mentioned before. And then on top of it, there's an issue of creating an avira. If your name or the name of your hechsher is directly connected to the violation, you shouldn't be giving the hechsher on the food, right? If it's something that's a little bit more out there that's not connected, so to you, it's not related back to you, so then in such a situation, it's possible to go ahead and give the hechsher.
So let's go back a couple weeks ago when we gave the shear,
mm-hmm.
and whether it was appropriate for somebody to teach Torah to a group that, let's say, is not so...
So it's funny, you know, Marvin, I love you. And the reason I love you is because, quite honestly, you and I have been learning together and sitting together so long that sometimes I think your questions are forming in my head a day before. Right? So I indeed asked this question to Rav Shai. I did not ask the question to my Rebbe, but I asked the question to Rav Shai. So Rav Shai says back to me, he says, I don't think that the teaching Torah issue in that environment, he says you have to weigh it out to figure out where is it going to make a bigger impact. Look, we right. So where there's a potential for positive influence, I don't think people are going to walk away and say, let's say, for instance, I don't know, you go to a college campus where they serve treif, right? And the Hillel brings you in to go ahead and be involved in the conversation, right? The Hillel may not exactly have a kosher food program, right? But you're brought in to teach to the Orthodox and to the Conservative and the Reform to have an impact and to make a Kiddush Hashem. So Rosh Hashanah said, I don't think people are going to assume that you're now all of a sudden supportive of going to a backwards college without any access to kosher food. Right?
The rabbi from Migdal Or.
Right. Or very good. Right? Rav Grossman, right? Who, from Migdal Or. I don't think that people are going to make a mistake and assume that you're sanctioning. Right? That all of a sudden it's okay not to. There needs to be a certain degree of understanding where you are, but also affiliation makes a difference. Okay. I thank you all very much. With this, we are closing out the book of Bereishis, and we will declare Chazak, Chazak v'nischazik, because when we stand together, I saw a nice thought from Rav Asher Weiss today, who points out that what keeps us strong is that we stand together at special moments, and we realize that we work together with one another, that we seek opportunities for bracha v'hatzlacha from one another, no matter where we are, but we also have to have standards with each other that keeps us not only naki me'ashem when we Yisrael, but also helps us achieve something else. And what's that? V'nimzachem v'seichel tov. We have to be able to make sure that when we present, that we have seichel, b'nei Elokim v'adam. Okay, good Shabbos, and thank you all very much.